From the City of Angels near the Pacific Ocean, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be across the nation, around the world. I'm George Norrie, and welcome to Coast AM. Later on tonight, the Encyclopedia of Witchcraft. But here's what's happening. Well, you know, we watch sunspots. Big sunspot AR-2192 has now grown even bigger, spreading across one-third of more solar terrain today than it did yesterday. They say the chances of an explosion are growing along with a sunspot. NOAA forecasters saying the odds of an M-class flare, 60%. An X-class, 20%. A big X-flare, that could take down the grid. The bodies of seven women have been recovered in Indiana as a man has confessed to a recent murder that led authorities to even more. The 43-year-old man confessed to strangling a woman whose body was found at a local motel. He then directed at least three other bodies to authorities there, while three more were found over the weekend. Jeez. 43 people who came into contact with Ebola patient Thomas Eric Duncan are now officially cleared after not demonstrating any symptoms during a 21-day monitoring period. Four others will complete their 21-day monitoring period very soon, so that is good news for them. But what is new on the Ebola front? Let's check in with Christian Wild, researcher, author, and, of course, his website, myheartbook.com. What's the latest, Christian?
Well, George, I hope you're feeling a lot better, a lot less worried since the appointment of this new czar. Yeah, I know what you're saying. I think the country would feel a little better if he had some medical background, and particularly an understanding of how to control infectious diseases. I don't mean to make light of this.
I understand.
Because it's a very serious disease. In Liberia, George, according to the New York Times, the country of Liberia has only one doctor for 100,000 people. Predictions say 56% of healthcare workers will die from this disease while they're trying to help other people. It is no doubt a tragic and frustrating situation. 22 countries have now banned flights from Sierra Leone and Liberia. A few of those countries are Belize, Trinidad, Tobago, Jamaica, Cameroon, and the South America, Colombia. So while a ban for the U.S. on its face seems to make common sense, I think we have to listen carefully to the advice of someone, I think, is the most rational authority and the wisest adult in the room. He is Anthony Fauci. He is the director of infectious diseases for the NIH. His argument for not issuing a travel ban is because he believes we are able to better track and report on anyone coming in the country, and we would have the opportunity to screen and monitor their exposure to other people. Otherwise, he said, we would be at great disadvantage and ultimately much less safe. Now, the health agencies have had 41 years and billions of dollars to come up with a vaccine or a cure for this virus, and they have not. There have been some 70 outbreaks of Ebola through the years, and now with their backs to the wall, the agencies hope to come up with a quick fix, a remedy that normally would take years and years to develop. And then, as the director himself has said, even after all that, we don't know if it would even work. Can we afford to go on this route with the Ebola virus with the crisis already upon us? Now, many times a drug that is approved by the FDA for a particular disease is found to work very well on a completely different disease. Mm-hmm. If we had the time, George, I could share several of those examples.
Well, the problem with this, Christian, is do you believe them? That's the bottom line. Can you believe these people? In Liberia, for example, they claim that Ebola was concocted by Big Pharma and us.
Yeah. No, George, you can't believe them because I've heard the directors themselves say, we don't even know, after all the years of doing this and developing a vaccine, if it would even work. So all the years, billions spent on coming up with an antiviral drug for the AIDS epidemic. And incidentally, the structure of this virus is not totally different from the cellular structure of the Ebola virus. And the knowledge gained from studying the AIDS virus for 30 years may be helpful in treating Ebola, at least in the short term. Now, I want to ask you to go to my website, folks.
Myheartbook.com.
Go there tonight, where I just added an actual videoed interview with a desperate doctor in Liberia who, by using an approved AIDS drug as a last-ditch effort, has saved 13 of his 15 dying Ebola patients.
Well, that's pretty dramatic. Christian, thank you. And his website, myheartbook.com. ISIS militants launching about 15 near simultaneous attacks on Kurdish forces in northern Iraq in what Kurdish government officials and the Kurdish news agency say fierce and renewed push for Kurdish held territory there. You know, as we've been talking over the years, an overwhelming majority of people simply say it feels as if events in the United States are simply out of control. They've expressed mounting alarm about terrorism, anxiety, Ebola, skepticism of everything, political parties. And only 3 weeks before the November 4th midterm elections, who knows what's going to happen? I'll always remember one of my favorite clips from the movie Network by Howard Beale. So we turned to our own Howard, not Howard Beale, but Howard Bloom. You know what? He was right, Howard, when that movie came out. He's still right today.
It's a very powerful speech, and it's fundamentally, bear with me, it's fundamentally wrong. Things have been getting so much better that it's ridiculous. We are now 10 times the amount of peace in the world that we had in 1650, 350 years ago. 10 times as much peace. We live twice as long as we lived in 1850. The salary of the poorest paid worker is the equivalent of the salaries of 7 of the poorest paid workers, a whole tenementful of the poorest paid workers in 1850. The IQ, the average IQ, has gone up by 35 points in the last 114 years. And if you look at and we've gone up in height by an average of 4 inches in the last 100 years. Things are getting better. We don't see it, and we don't see it in large part because of the utter persuasiveness of the kind of hysteria that Howard Beale is showing. Let's look at the craziness from this week alone, from today. One of the craziest stories is that a paralyzed Polish man is walking because of cells from his nose. They are cells that encourage the growth of neurons, and they've been transplanted into his back where he was stabbed several times. He hasn't been able to walk for 2 years. He is walking. That is a one-of-a-kind thing that will become ordinary in the next 5 years. I have nothing positive to say about that poor woman who got stuck in a chimney in Thousand Oaks, California, trying to meet a man she met online. it's funny, but it's not necessarily a sign that Howard Beale was wrong. We've discovered in Guyana a spider the size of a puppy, so if you're tired of mammals as pets, you can always get yourself a spider. Monica Lewinsky has returned and has 23,000 Twitter followers, and she has something important to say, George. Why did she become so famous? Because we all love sexual headlines. We cannot help it. That's the way humans are built. But we have used her and have discarded her and have shamed her life for our own titillation, for our own amusement. That isn't right. And if she is reaccepted by society and she's able to make money by speaking and doing books, God bless her. The Ebola situation, there are 125 Texans still being monitored, despite those 43 out of 48 people who were cleared, but only 2 people have gotten Ebola in the United States itself. And in Spain, there is a nurse who we were afraid we would lose to Ebola, and she walked out of the hospital healthy today. The stock market dropped 1,000 points in 22 days. But it's moving back up. The fear index spiked 5 days ago, but it's now going back down. The Swedes are spooked over signs of a Russian submarine in their waters. And the fact is the Russians are building 10 new nuclear subs right now, brand new ones. And the Iranians are showing off these incredible, well, we call them Mickey Mouse weapons, but they can be very valuable to the Iranians if they ever go to war against us. Helicopters with ship-killing missiles and tank-killing missiles. But what they're hiding, according to some experts, is, and this is something you're an expert in, magnetic pulse weapons, satellite warfare, and nuclear weapons. But the real scary stuff, there is scary stuff, there's always scary stuff, despite this radical decrease in the violence of the world, is ISIS. We finally got sane and started dropping arms to Kobani, the town that's been under siege.
Might be too late, but at least we tried.
But they're small arms, George, and they need big arms.
Yes.
They're going up against American tanks. And the Kurds have said they'll let in Peshmerga reinforcements, Kurdish reinforcements, But that could be a problem, too, because they don't need reinforcements. They need weapons. And as you just pointed out, ISIS has demonstrated an ability to attack on many fronts simultaneously. They're doing that in Iraq. But the weirdest thing, the strangest thing, the scariest thing is that ISIS has just put out the fourth issue of its English language magazine, a gorgeously art directed magazine. It's called The Beak. And there's a cover article about the revival of slavery. And the article inside trumpets how wonderful it is for civilization if you take tens of thousands or hundreds of thousands of women and children as sex slaves. And after they explain that, after all, you're giving these women an opportunity to give birth to Muslims, even if you rape them, you're giving them an opportunity to give birth to Muslims, they say, we will conquer your Rome, break your crosses, and enslave your women by the permission of Allah the Exalted. If we do not reach that time, then our children and our grandchildren will reach it, and they will sell your sons as slaves at the slave market. That's the real madness.
And people-powered, as you well know, are just uptight right now. And that's the whole effect. They're just uptight. Howard Bloom, his website, howardbloom.net. Babies born in the summer are much more likely to suffer from mood swings when they grow up, while those born in the winter are less likely to become irritable adults, according to scientists. The researchers studied 400 people, matched their personality type to when in the year they were born, and they claim that people born at certain times of the year have a far greater chance of developing certain types of temperaments, which can lead to some mood disorders. That's fascinating, isn't it? Ford Motor Company developing a driving seat that can detect a potential heart attack and bring the car safely to a stop. How about that for technology? And could the bank we trust to safeguard our savings now be one of the riskiest places to put your money? Craig Smith, Don't Bank on It, next on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, noted author Craig Smith back with us, familiar face and voice of truth and reason. He uses his common sense, no-nonsense analysis of geopolitical and economic trends to inform you. He's an entrepreneur, a monetary expert, and of course, noted author. Here he is back on Coast to Coast. Craig, welcome back, my friend.
George, it's great to hear your voice and great to be back with you.
So should I run to the bank and take out whatever I have in there?
Well, it probably wouldn't hurt.
Oh, boy.
I've got to tell you, 2 weeks ago, you did an incredible interview with Greg over at USA Watchdog.
Yes.
And I thought to myself, I can't believe the timing on this, because 2 weeks later, I'm going to be talking about the new book, which when Lowell Ponte and I set out to write this book, George, I was telling Stephanie earlier today, it had a totally different title. And all of a sudden, we started peeling the layers back. And Lowell is such a meticulous researcher. The things that we found out about the banks, George, most people don't have a clue about.
No, they don't. We write our checks. We use our ATM card. And I guess that's about it, Craig.
Well, it's really all we know about it. We really don't understand how it functions. I bet you most of the Coast to Coast listeners don't realize that when you put your money in a bank, it no longer belongs to you. You become an unsecured creditor of that bank. At least that's what the courts in Britain have decided. And we just signed a joint agreement, the FDIC, along with the Bank of England, back in December of 2012, that lines right up with Section 2 of the Dodd-Frank Act that basically says that in the next collapse, and there's another one coming, George, it'll wipe out all the stockholders.
I think so, too.
All the bondholders, and guess who will be the unsecured creditors, the depositors? And the FDIC currently has $500 billion at most to cover over $7 trillion worth of deposits. George, the math is frightening, and I wish I could be as positive as Howard Bloom was. Yes, we've had a lot of great things happen over the last 150 years, but over the last 30 years, there's been a deterioration in our banking system that is getting ready to catch up with us. And George, if we think the big event was 2008, we've seen nothing yet, my friend, nothing.
I had Jonathan Kahn on last month, and he was talking about his work on prophecy and the Jewish word Shemitah, which is happening right now. It's from now to September 25th of 2015. And he predicts that there's going to be a massive collapse in the stock market in this period. In this period, what do you think of that?
Well, you know, he's not alone. I'm not much for predictions on the stock market myself, but that's what James Rickards is talking about. That's if you look at some of the articles that are coming out of Bloomberg, that's what they're saying. I mean, many people are saying right now that we are headed for the real collapse because we never allowed the system to reboot, if you will. You've got to keep in mind, George, that in our history, we've had dozens and dozens of bank crises and
oh,
financial
sure.
crises, 1837, 1839, 1857. I could go right through the list of them. And we always recovered within a year or two. But this time we didn't recover because the Federal Reserve went in and extended artificially low interest rates and made things way worse by extending their balance sheet to $4 trillion and basically freezing our economy in its tracks. And for the listeners out there who think that things are getting better, all they have to do is see the pullback in the stock market recently. We did a newsletter on this a couple months ago saying that the fundamentals cannot support this stock market at these levels if we don't see a growing economy. And now we're seeing a worldwide shrinking of the economy, George, and nothing's going to reverse that. You can't go negative interest rates. It doesn't work. They're so terrified of deflation right now, they're willing to allow inflation to run at any level it'll go to.
What should interest rates be at, Craig?
I think legitimately they should be 3-3.5% right now and probably headed towards 4 or 5%. If you look at it on trend, they're normally around 5%. That would be a legitimate number for the 10-year bond. The 10-year bond today is trading at 2.1%. It got below 2% during the crisis. And you just can't keep things artificial this way forever, George. You can't keep pumping a drug into the patient and telling yourself the patient is healed just because they feel better when, in fact, they're dying. And we'll get into it, you know, after the break on some of the numbers that the banks are starting to exhibit. As a matter of fact, Bloomberg came out. And they said this. They said that if they took a real stress test of our banks on what they call the NYU model, Wells Fargo would pass, J.P. Morgan would fail, Citi would fail, Goldman Sachs would fail, Morgan Stanley would fail, and they would all have a combined shortfall of at least $300 billion, which would virtually wipe out the FDIC insurance. George, the numbers aren't good. And
there won't be another bailout, will there?
No. And that's I can't wait till we talk about that. This time it will be a bail-in, much like we saw in Cyprus. They will hold on to your money. You will not get your money except in increments. And if you're a large enough depositor, like in the case of Cyprus, you lost 47% of your deposit.
God, so if you had $50,000 in there, 40% of it gone right off the top.
Yeah, well, that 50 would be a little low, but if you had over 100,000 euros, that's correct. You everything above 100,000 euros, you lost, let's just round it off, 50%.
And you already paid taxes on it.
You better believe it.
Craig, stay with us. Going to hit the break, but we're going to come back and talk more about Don't Bank on It. Split show tonight, so we'll take calls next hour with Craig Smith as well. We'll be back. And welcome back to Coast, George Norrie with you. Craig Smith with us. Don't Bank on It, his latest work. Craig, why is it so difficult to get your money out of the bank, but so easy to put it in?
Well, it calls for some conjecture on our behalf, but Lowell and I believe that we're starting to see implemented currency controls. We really believe that the banks are going to start to get you comfortable with the fact that they control your money and that you don't control your money. When we first started writing the book, George, we had two events, one that we personally knew of and one that was reported to us, where people walked into their banks and merely asked to cash a check, one for $25,000, and they wanted to walk out with cash. They were then questioned, hammered, beat up, and basically were told, I'm sorry, we cannot cash the check. The next day, this person's personal friend went back in with their lawyer, and they walked out with $25,000 in cash after filling out the appropriate paperwork. Well, as we dug through this, we found out this wasn't an uncommon event. It happened to a fella in London at a HSBC bank branch. And then J.P. Morgan came out with an announcement to their clients that they weren't going to do international bank wires from personal accounts and would no longer cash. It'd give you more than $50,000 cash within any one statement period. So we're starting to see that the banks are very, very quick to take your money, but very, very slow in giving you your money back. And that's a sign that they're having a liquidity problem. Now, of course, that doesn't surprise me, George, given the fact that, like right now, for example, J.P. Morgan has about $2.4 trillion worth of deposits against, and I'm looking up the number real quickly here, $68 trillion worth of derivatives. That's a frightening number, George. The two big fail banks in 2008 are 37% bigger and 40% more leveraged than they were in 2008. So it makes us think that they are just not too quick to give back the money. And you know, I listen to Coast a lot, and I know that you're very concerned about the electric grid. I know you're very concerned about EMP. We discussed it in the last book, The Great Withdrawal, and in this book. But, George, let me remind people that back in 1859, we had what was referred to as the Carrington event.
That's right.
I know you're familiar with it.
If we had the electrical systems that we have today, we would have been wiped out then.
You bet. You know, it was basically a huge, as you know, coronal mass ejection. It came 17.6 hours later to Earth and fried all the telegraph systems and so on and so forth. Well, there's a group of insurers for Lloyd's of London, and that we're working along with the Atmospheric and Environmental Research Center and with the United States. They jointly did a study to find out what an event like that would cost. Okay, do you know an event like that today, George, would cost $2.6 trillion?
Yeah, oh, of course.
Right off the bat. I mean, that's just a start before you saw all the domino effects. And for those people that say, well, that can't happen, may I remind you that NASA back in 2012, when the sun had that big explosion, had it been 1 week earlier and the Earth had sped around our year-long orbit the way it would normally the week thereof, we would have had that same destructive energy hit the planet Earth at the same way it did it during the Carrington event. Now, what does that do to the banking system? Well, it shuts down what's called SWIFT, the Society for Worldwide Interbank Financial Telecommunications. Nobody will be able to tell anybody what they have on deposit.
No, you couldn't. ATMs won't work. You can't get any money out.
Oh, it's amazing. Now, let me give you an example, George. Let's say that you have $700 in your bank account and you're paying your monthly bills and you're writing checks out for it, and all of a sudden you start getting notices from your bank that the checks are bouncing. Well, you call your bank and you say, what the heck's going on? I have $700. I wrote a couple hundred dollars worth of checks. Why are they bouncing? And the bank says, well, no, Mr. Norrie, you don't have $700 and you have $70 in our bank.
Well, yeah, and I'd say, what happened to the other $630?
And they say, well, our computers, Mr. Norrie, only show you only had $70. It never was $700. It was $70. And then you come to find out that this bank was just like J.P. Morgan, that was hacked, and 86 million people's information was taken.
And the money.
8.6 million people have chased at J.P. Morgan. Okay, and that then another 10 financial firms were attacked, and the SWIFT system was attacked. And along the way, they attacked Home Depot, Target, Kmart, and the others. And nobody knows who owns what or what belongs where. And people don't think that can happen, but George, computers have made this world a wonderful place to live, but it has also made the banking system extremely vulnerable.
I've got a friend, he owns his own private investigations firm in St. Louis, and he just opened up a branch office in Los Angeles. And he was telling me that a lot of these hackers and scammers now, Craig, they use Magic Jack phone systems, so you can't trace who they are. And they scramble. I don't know how they do this. They scramble their IP addresses on their computers that they use to hack into people.
Yeah, it's amazing where the technology has gone. And by the way, on the J.P. Morgan attack, it was 76 million household customers that were affected, George. And here's the most frightening part about it. J.P. Morgan still can't tell you how they got in, what they took out, and what doors they left in place to come right back in.
They can't find them, can they?
No, and just like you said, because they scrambled all their pathways in. And believe me, George, I still work off a yellow pad, and I have a tough time with email and Google.
I know what you're saying.
So I don't understand the technology. But now the hackers are saying they want to take the systems down. And they do it for sport, George. Now they're starting to do it for money. And you know that identity theft is huge in America.
It sure is.
And now the banks are vulnerable to it. And that's why we went through 20 vulnerabilities that the banks have. And these examples that I'm citing to you, George, these are not theoretical. They've happened. They're documented. You know, when Lowell Ponte did the research for this book, I didn't realize that we'd have 35 pages of footnotes because Lowell and I sat and talked about it. When people read the book, they won't believe it unless we can document it, because nobody ever thought in a million years that if my money's in a bank, I'm an unsecured creditor. Yes, you are, according to the agreements that were struck by the Bank of England and the FDIC. And that's right in line with the report and recommendations of the Cross-Border Bank Resolution Group from Basel, Switzerland. And I could go right through the group, George. I could show you where right now there's $710 trillion, according to the Bank of International Settlements, that are vulnerable. That's the central bank to the central banks, by the way. You know, that's like the Federal Reserve is to our banks, the Bank of International Settlement is to the other federal, you know, the international banks around the world. They have $710 trillion worth of exposure, George. And any one of these banks that, forget about collapsing, just gets their numbers mixed up, can cause chaos to a level that nobody knows or anything.
When we take calls next hour, let's also ask for people who've been hacked or who have had issues at their banks, because I bet, Craig, it's a nightmare.
Oh, it is. And George, we have the ultimate stress test for your listeners tonight. Next time you have extra money, and of course you can put it right back in the next day if you'd like. I don't suggest you do, but go to a bank and say, I'd like to take $8,000 out of my savings account.
What if you only have $300? You still ask for $8,000?
And I'd like to have cash. Watch what happens. They're first going to offer you a counter check. Then they're going to offer you a cashier's check. Then when you refuse that, say, no, I want $100 bills, they're going to start asking you a series of questions. George, since when has the bank become my mother or my wife?
They think you're a drug dealer.
Well, exactly. And that gets into Operation Choke Point. All of a sudden, gun dealers now, coin dealers, and a whole group of various other people that trade in with money are now suspect under Operation Choke Point that we write about in the book.
If you're going to, let's say, Las Vegas, and you bring some cash with you, does TSA stop that?
You know, George, I haven't been on an airplane in I don't know how long, so I can't answer that question. I really don't know. I know when you travel internationally, you have to declare how much you're leaving the country.
Right. And if it's over $10,000, you got a problem.
You have a serious problem, especially if you don't report it. But I don't know how it works domestically. But if you went to go get $10,000 out of the bank, George, and, you know, you're an honest guy. I know George Norrie pretty well. I mean, you pay your taxes. You abide by the law.
I pay too much.
Isn't that the truth? You earned your money honestly. If you went to take $10,000 out of the bank, why should you have to be run up one side of the hill and down the other to get it?
It's your money.
Exactly. They should say, here you are, Mr. Norrie. Thank you for banking with us.
Yep. It's your account. I mean, I can understand if they didn't recognize you or know you, or, you know, maybe you're going in there with phony ID or something. I can understand those kinds of probing. But if they know you at your bank, It's red tape. It's a hassle.
Well, yes. And you know, this all started, it started in 86, but went on steroids after September 11th. And, you know, they were trying to track down terrorist money, and I understand that. But they have taken liberties, as you know, through the NSA and other, if you will, spying on the people facilities, that it's ridiculous. Look, I don't have, you know, they can look at what they like with me. I pay my taxes. I do everything by the book. But we shouldn't have that in this nation. That's not what this nation was founded for. And that's why the byline on our book is the unsafe world of 21st century banking. Today's bank is not your granddad's bank anymore. You know, before they used to have a big vault, and they actually kept money in there. So if Jesse James and the boys showed up, unless they had sticks of dynamite to blow the bank door open, they couldn't get the money out. Nowadays, you open up a bank vault, there's nothing in the bank. You have blips on a computer screen.
I'm concerned about what happened in Cyprus with, you know, like you were saying right before the break, 47% they take off. You know, if people can't afford that, if they got money in the bank and, you know, 47% of it is gone.
And this is what's really killer too, George. Think about it. Who are the people that keep money in the bank? Those are the people that are afraid to gamble in the stock market. They're afraid to gamble in the real estate market. They want to just make sure they worked hard for their money. They don't want to lose it. They're not making a lot of interest right now. As a matter of fact, they're making a negative return rate, and you have to pay taxes on the return. You're getting paid 1%. Inflation's running 3%. But then you run the risk that if the bank goes under, you taking a 50% haircut if what happened in Cyprus happened here in America. And we've got to come to grips with the numbers. Now, look, FDIC insurance is like any insurance. You know, State Farm doesn't expect everybody to crash their cars on the same day. So they play the actuaries, the odds. So odds are that not every bank would go out on the same day. But if you remember what happened in 2008, George, it was a cascading effect. Bear Stearns got in trouble. They were taken over by JP Morgan.
It was a domino.
Right. Merrill Lynch got in trouble. They got taken over by Bank of America.
Lehman Brothers?
Next thing you know, Lehman Brothers came, which was founded during the Civil War, for Pete's sakes. And they said, no, we're not going to bail Lehman out. And next thing you know, all you know what broke loose.
Yep.
And we were told, if we don't get the TARP passed, oh, the end of the world's here. The banks are going to collapse. Well, after 3 weeks of haggling in D.C. and adding $85 billion worth of pork barrel spending to the TARP bill, it got passed. George, if it was that critical, we should have collapsed before TARP was ever passed.
And we bailed out General Motors.
And think about it, George. We wiped out the bondholders. Now, I understand wiping out the shareholders. But the bondholders, bonds were always considered a gentleman's investment.
So they lost everything.
And they were bonds. Bonds are like cash, for Pete's sakes. They're secure instruments. And this is what we're trying to portray
now,
in the book.
Aren't they doing this all over again?
Yeah.
The derivative, everything's the same again, isn't it?
Yeah. It's worse. As I said, the two big to fail banks are now 37% bigger. They're 40% more leveraged than they were. And this is what has Lowell and I terribly concerned. That's why we had a totally different book plan, George. And we had to shift gears, which, by the way, the name of the book, Don't Bank on It. We got the link messed up with you guys on Coast to Coast. The link is don'tbankonitbook.com. Don'tbankonitbook.com. That's the right link to it.
Is there a wrong link up there now?
Well, what happened is we had a link to Amazon where they did a special when the book first came out, and it only gives it to you in Kindle version where you can actually get the actual book at the don'tbankonit.com site. Matter of fact, you know, the publisher is going to probably do the same thing again. You know, they've promised to give away the executive summary and the white paper that we did prior to the book, but I think there's also a way, and again, I didn't get this all clear, so I don't want to get myself in trouble. Last time you melted down our phone systems and
we always do
computer systems, so I'm not sure I want to risk the computers again. But if they go to don'tbankonitbook.com or 800-630-1494, leave your name and number, and they'll make sure to get you at least the white paper, or if not a copy of the book, George, because when we wrote the book, what we saw, we couldn't believe, George. I mean, banks are being hacked. You're saying, is it happening all over again? Yes, George, it is. Guess what? It was just announced today, just before I went on the air with you. The headline was Mortgage Giants Set to Loosen Lending Standards. Fannie and Freddie,
amazing.
The same people that got us in trouble back in 2008 are getting ready to reduce the down payments to 3% or possibly less, George.
Here we go again.
We're setting up the same thing. We're extending artificially low interest rates for extended periods of time, increasing the Fed's balance sheets, allowing banks to make riskier bets in derivatives, and now the GSEs are going to go ahead and take mortgage-backed securities with just 3% down. We are setting ourselves up for something that's going to make, as I said, 2008 look like child's play. And I'm not trying to overhype this, George. I wish this wouldn't happen. Lowell and I, when we wrote the book, when we started finding this stuff out, and you know, Lowell lives in Carlsbad, I live in Phoenix. So we had to go back and forth on the phone and emails. And we kept finding this stuff and said, this can't be true. We got to dig further. We've got to get deeper sources. And next thing you know, the sources are New York Times, Salt Lake City Tribune, the Associated Press, Reuters. I can't wait till we start talking about artificial intelligence and how the banks are using it to beat you to the punch, George, now in the stock market. Do you know that they do trades in nanoseconds now? A nanosecond to a second is what a second is to 31.7 years, George. That's what a nanosecond is.
So are you going to give us any good news, Mr. Smith?
Yeah, the good news is once we go through the crisis and allow the malinvestment to get out of the way and allow the excesses to be squeezed out of this market like they should have in 2008 and taken our medicine, we could have set up for the next 20, 30 years of the greatest prosperity we've ever had with, like what Howard Bloom talked about, the new technologies that we're developing and the new creations that we're coming up with. We could have the brightest years ahead of this nation. But as I told you, all these prior crises that we had, we didn't let the Federal Reserve get in and play the game. And as a direct result, recessions normally took 18 to 24 months. We came out of them and we started growing again. Hey, George, remember the Fed said they'd stop printing money once we got unemployment, but below 6.5%?
Yep.
Well, we're below 6.5%. If you believe the government numbers, how come we're still printing money? And we're talking about a QE4. They're just not being honest with the people, George, because politically, it's suicide. If a politician takes the podium tomorrow and says, look, folks, we've got to squeeze the excesses out of this. I know you've played by the rules, but we spent more money than we've taken in. We're $17 trillion in hock in the federal government. The banks are in over their heads. We have $100 trillion worth of long-term liabilities with Medicare, Medicaid, Social Security, and all the other entitlements. We've got to revamp the system. You think that guy's going to get reelected, George?
Probably not.
No, and that's why, as I've said before on your program, good economics are horrible politics, and good politics are horrible economics. And right now, the numbers are catching up with us, George. Now, I love this that you had a commercial on about James Rickard's book.
Yeah.
I mean, this is not some guy who just makes things up. This man worked for the Pentagon. He set up the war games for the Pentagon. He's calling for a 25-year depression if we don't start addressing these things quickly.
Let's take some calls and stories next on Coast to Coast AM.